Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
So the Humanities Fest in Chicago hosts people throughout the year, and still to come, Sunday, April 27th at 11 a.m. until 12 noon at the Athenaeum Center for Thought and Culture will be Heather Cox Richardson, the author, the historian, the podcaster, the Substack newsletter writer, over 500,000 readers every day. I suspect the number's actually higher than that. She's gaining in popularity with her clear thoughts and her historical perspective. Most recently, she wrote a little bit, as everybody has been paying attention to this, Kilmar Abreu Garcia. She said, the administration appears to have tried to create a fiction whereby the U.S. can spirit anyone out of the U.S. without due process, render them to prison in another country, and then declare that it doesn't have the power to get that person back. Prior to writing that, in a previous post, she wrote about Steve Inskeep's take on all of that. If I understand this correctly, he said, the U.S. president has launched a trade war against the world, believes he can force the EU and China to meet his terms, is determined to annex China and Greenland, but is powerless before the sovereign might of El Salvador. Is that it? Her speech is titled, it looks like, if I'm reading this correctly, Democracy Awakening. Heather, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Is that the correct title of your presentation, Democracy Awakening?
That was the title of my last book, and that's probably what they picked up to put on the program.
You'll understand if I see that as optimistic or hopeful. Are you optimistic or hopeful about democracy?
Absolutely. You know, if you look at where we are right now, things are certainly dark in ever so many ways. But as always in the past, when push comes to shove and Americans have to decide whether or not they're going to do the right thing, they tend to come together to do that. They do it so late that we're all hanging by our fingernails from the window ledge, but they tend to do that. And I think you can see it happening all around us now.
Why do you say that?
Well, you look at both the large protests that are beginning to form against the Trump administration's use of power in ways that are both illegal and unconstitutional. You see it in the Department of Justice, not the Department of Justice. You see it in the courts and the state attorneys general beginning to push back hard against the administration. You even see it in the Supreme Court's decision in the middle of the night on Saturday that Trump could not go ahead and deport more people under the 1789 Alien Enemies Act. You see it in business, taking a look at what you were just talking about on the news, this extraordinary drop in the stock market, not only because of the tariffs, but also because of the instability in the U.S. administration that is creating, you know, that is making us lose our status as a safe haven for so much money around the world, mm-hmm. panicking people, these attacks on Powell. And you see it, I think, in things like Harvard University, talking to its donors, I suspect, and having them say, somebody's got to stick up for the humanities and for Americans in this terrible moment, and they're doing it. So if you had said 90 days ago that we would be where we are today, I think none of us would have believed things would be so bad. But they also would not have believed, on the other hand, that things could be ramping up to take back democracy.
Yeah. I wonder by what means. I spoke to a high school class a couple of weeks ago, and they were asking me a little bit about this conflict between the executive branch and the judicial branch. And I said, the problem is the Supreme Court doesn't have a navy. If the president continues to just ignore rulings that they don't agree with, what's the course of action then, Heather?
Well, remember, you've also got the third branch, Congress, which has also, the Republicans in Congress have really quite surprised me by the degree to which they were willing to let the administration destroy their prerogatives. Now, they appear also to be waking up in part because of this extraordinary damage that's being done to the economy, but also to our national security. Because after all, of course, what a government is supposed to do is keep its people safe. And our Department of Defense right now seems to be in complete shambles and is not, you know, there's real danger that we will not be safe as we destroy our alliances through the lack of our diplomacy, and then also as our Defense Department, you know, seems to be crumbling. But there's Congress, but then there is also the group that we never really talk enough about, and that's the American people. That is, if you think about our Constitution, sovereignty in the United States and the construction of power in the United States literally comes from we the people. We give our power in the Constitution to a government consisting of these three branches of government, in which only the Congress can make the laws, by the way. We give our power to them, and we are the ones who maintain that power. So to the degree that the American people step forward and say, hey, listen, we don't want to destroy our economy. We would like to have a secure country and a strong military, and we'd rather not tell our foreign enemies our secrets, and so on. The power of the American people to put pressure on the administration and also on Congress, and to demonstrate that this is not what they want out of their government, is in fact what has managed to reclaim democracy in bad moments in our past, in the 1850s and 60s, for example, again in the 1890s and the 1900s, and then in the 1930s. So we do have a model for how this works.
So the lever will be the people at rallies and protests. I'm not being skeptical, but I'm not so certain that that's going to be sufficiently powerful given the forces that they're working against.
No, that's not the only place that people can put pressure. People can put pressure on creating the government we want at the local level, everything from school boards and towns up to the state level, putting pressure on state people, and then working within communities to create new alliances. And you've seen this recently. Joe Rogan came out against the lack of due process. You're seeing a lot of stuff changing. One of the things that I try and push is for people to recognize that they have agency to create change. We don't have to sit here and see what's being done to us. And if you think it doesn't matter, look at the fact, you know, as we were just talking about with due process, that Nayib Bukele, the president of El Salvador, obviously felt pressured into permitting Senator Chris Van Hollen, a Democrat of Maryland, in to see Kilmer Abrego Garcia. He had said he wasn't going to do it. He made a joke out of it and all sorts of things. There was such pressure that he felt from the public, at least in the United States and possibly from other Congress people, that he let Van Hollen see Abrego Garcia. But you can make comparisons of that. You know, you look at the fact that the Trump administration recently first told Harvard it was essentially taking over the university. And then when Harvard stood up to it, said, oh, oopsie poopsie, that was a mistake. We didn't mean to send that letter out. It's still your fault that you're upset, but we didn't mean to do it. And you can see the places in which extraordinary public pressure have forced the administration to step back and to try and adjust what they're doing to try and maintain some sort of popularity.
I notice you quoted the senator who said, I'm not defending the man, I'm defending the rights of this man to due process. And if we take those away from him, we jeopardize those for everybody else. And so that's writ large the reason that this case is exploding across the country. I'm a little surprised at the legs that it has. This is the sort of thing that could slip in a news cycle, and yet people are still talking about that. But I did want to ask you about one other thing. You keep saying we have these rights and these opportunities, but elections have consequences. I heard J.D. Vance say something like, Donald Trump won the election. This is the agenda. And about the economy, they say we need to be patient. Yeah, it sucks. They told you this was going to be painful, but we have to do this reset. Talk about all of that, Heather.
Little topics, you mean. So let's be clear first that more people voted for somebody other than Donald Trump than voted for him.
49-5. You bet.
So when they talk about it being a mandate, that is one heck of a stretch. There is also the problem, I think, that the administration is having that Both Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance during the campaign promised everything to everyone, and many of those things were incompatible. And now, of course, the rubber is meeting the road, and he has not been able to do any of the things that he promised to do. Remember, end the war of Russia's war against Ukraine with one phone call, bring prices down on day one, you know, bring back manufacturing, all the stuff that was going to happen immediately, in fact, has not happened. And that is, there's really no way to square some of the circles that they created in the 2024 campaign. So you can see this now in the really rapidly dropping popularity of Trump and certainly of his sidekick, Elon Musk. But then again, people didn't really believe that they were going to implement Project 2025 or this idea of slashing the U.S. government into, you know, basically into the ground. People didn't see that coming. So the idea that this is somehow a popular movement, I think, is belied by the dropping poll numbers and the fact that many people are now turning out, especially in special elections, in very, very high percentage numbers to flip districts that voted for Trump. So that argument that, in fact, this is a popular thing and this is what they have been called to do, I think is completely incorrect. We know that before the election, when anybody actually knew what was in Project 2025, only 4% of Americans actually wanted that to happen. So that idea that this is a popular move, I think, is incorrect. But second, you know, I don't think even those people who talked about there being a reset in the economy, first of all, accepted that the economy under the previous administration was just about the best that one could construct. Remember, The Economist had that cover of its one of its magazines about how this was just such an extraordinary, you know, miracle economy. But the right-wing media spun that as being this terrible economy in which everybody was suffering, as they were, by the way, from the inflation that everybody was under because of the coronavirus pandemic. But now, for all that you can say, oh, it was terrible before, people are looking at losing jobs. They're looking at lower wages. They're looking at cuts. They're looking at this drop in the stock market. And some people say, well, not that many people are invested in the stock market. No, but their pensions are. And their reliance on Social Security depends on the government actually functioning. And we know that that's been cut. We're worried about Medicare. We're worried about Medicaid. I actually think that we are in a really interesting reset of this country that is taking on not just the Trump administration, but 40 years of declining to invest in our infrastructure and in our people, and in declining to do the things that Americans really want, like common sense gun safety legislation. More than 80% of Americans want that, and they've not been able to get it. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of this, but I expect that either we will become a full-fledged dictatorship, like Vladimir Putin's Russia, or perhaps taking it a little bit more slowly, like Viktor Orban's Hungary, or Americans will reclaim our birthright.
But you started this conversation saying you think more of the latter than the former, and we have to hold on to that. So then what do you say about the Democrats who feel powerless on the sidelines and, in my view, are acting powerlessly? I'm frustrated with Democrats who, if we heed your call, don't seem to be coordinated or that engaged. What's your thought about that?
My thought about that is this looks to me, again, very much like the 1850s. And I hear frustration with the Democrats and people say, you know, who should we be following and so on. And my answer is, we don't know yet. Because what we are seeing is a reworking of the entire political system in which the people who are protesting, and I don't just mean in the streets, I mean not only, as I say, in the different levels of pushing back against the governments that exist, but there are huge numbers of people organizing over social media and in different kinds of organizations, beginning to articulate what we want in a leader. And I don't think that those different ideas have coalesced yet. And while that may sound like, you know, I'm kicking the can down the road, in fact, that's a really healthy way to come up with what a new kind of coalition will look like. And my comparison here is going to be to the 1850s. If anybody had asked in 1854 or 1855 who the political leaders in the United States were, and we're going to be going forward, they would have said absolutely Stephen Douglas. But if you had said, have you ever heard of Abraham Lincoln? They would have said who? I mean, he'd had one term in Congress. He was a corporate lawyer. He wasn't very active, but what he did is he listened to what the people were complaining about. And by 1859, he had been able to articulate a new ideology for a brand new political party. I'm not suggesting we're looking at a brand new political party necessarily. We might be. But what we are looking at is a new way to think about modern America that is still now, again, with a whole bunch of new voices from younger people, being articulated. And once it is articulated, there will be somebody to carry that torch forward. I just don't know who it is.
Heather Cox Richardson is speaking at the Athenaeum Center for Thought and Culture as part of the Humanities Fest in Chicago, Sunday, April 27th from 11 to noon. By the way, Heather, we need to wrap this conversation up. I'm getting a lot of text messages about you and for you, and they love you out there, Heather. This person says, when does she sleep? but one last question, when you were talking about maybe the path forward for the country vis-a-vis the Democrats, does J.B. Pritzker's name come up in your reading, listening, writing? Are you thinking about our governor's future at all?
I am. I'm actually glad you mentioned that. I am watching him very closely. I think he is articulating things in the way that certainly could resonate. I'm not gonna make any great predictions yet, but as we are watching some people moving up in the standing in the country, I would say not necessarily just the party, and some people falling, we could think of other governors who are probably not doing as well as Pritzker. Pritzker definitely seems to me to be a standout.
Do you think is it possible that he could be too progressive? I mean, isn't the lesson that the Democrats learned from the last election to not focus on some of those fringe issues, to find a center? It's not Bernie Sanders' party anymore, and JB has some fairly liberal ideas from a very liberal city and state.
No, I disagree with that. And I wish we had more time because I could tell you all the poll numbers. I disagree with that, and I'll just talk about the historical thing. What Americans want right now is a leader who will speak from principle. They don't have to agree with it all, but they want somebody who's going to stand up for America and stand up for the people. And those who are trying to tack to the center and be sort of wishy-washy, they're the ones that people are mad at. And what's really interesting about that is, if you know Sarah Longwell's work, she does focus groups. She says that idea of people standing up on principle for what is good for the people, even if you don't agree with all those things, is indistinguishable among all levels of, was looking at Democrats in that study, but it's also true of independents. I actually think the people who are going to be going forward are people like Lincoln who are willing to say, listen, you may not like this, as he was saying to his white Democratic supporters at the time, as opposed to the ones who had already joined the Republican Party. But this is what America stands for. And they respected that. And I suspect that you could see that the people whose voices are being listened to, they're the ones who are speaking out, not being quiet.
Heather Cox Richardson's in town next weekend. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having me.